Welcome to the Workflow Show. This is episode 304. Marquis.
Marquis.
That may mean absolutely nothing to you, but by the end of this podcast, you will be familiar both with Marquis, one of our software vendor partners par excellence.
And but it's not French, though. It's not Marquis. It's Marquis.
Well, we'll get into that. Yeah. There's a backstory there.
Okay.
We're joined today by Daniel Faulkner. Daniel is based in Nashville. He is the U.S. rep and main dude for Marquis Software. And for our listeners to get a frame of reference, Marquis starts to get very important with their product lines if you are using Avid products. And so today we're going to talk about what their software does and how it can help your workflow if you're using Media Composer, if you're using Avid's ISIS storage systems, if you're trying to implement third-party systems with an Avid NLE environment. They have a lot of very neat stuff. I've known Daniel for a number of years now. We've been plotting world domination in the background here this whole time.
And Nick never lets me in on these things, these world domination
plots.
You're
one of the new guys at Chesapeake, man. I mean, maybe we've known you for a long time, but you're recently in the fold. You haven't crossed through the seventh gate of your initiation
process.
That's
right. I'm still at gate four or five, somewhere around there.
You know, we haven't made him put on the robe and go through, like, the dark hallway with dudes with candles.
Right. Yeah. No, I haven't seen that. I didn't even know about that. Thank you. So I have that to look forward to.
It's basically like the last episode of True Detective, where he's in that, like, caves and there's
all
dudes.
Those vines.
Vines and weird skulls and dudes with axes.
Awesome.
That's right.
So, Daniel.
Yes.
Tell us about yourself, sir. Tell us about you and the history of Marquis and why it's called that and not Marquis.
You really want to start out on a very exciting note, introducing myself. Hopefully people don't fall asleep straight away. But I've been with Marquis for about 8 years now, and the company's about 12 to 15 years old. And started out working for, actually, SGL, doing support for those guys, working for a reseller here in Nashville.
And for our listeners who don't know SGL, SGL makes kind of some high-end and kind of expensive tape archive software. They manage tape libraries in the archive space. They have some very big installs. And it's largely what Avid environments have been oriented around if you're doing a big tape archive system with Avid.
Right.
Is that not correct, Daniel?
That is correct. Yeah. That is correct. And so working for a reseller here in Nashville, selling all different types of solutions, and we were on a install, or whatever you want to call it, in Bogota, Colombia. I can't go into too much detail about that.
It was for the drug lords, obviously, then?
Well, we won't go there, but
I think
we met...
I just took it there. Sorry.
You did, yeah. Well, I'm taking it back. And so we met...
Look, Jason Whetstone has a little red dot on his forehead.
So we met the founder of Marquis on... He was there for a similar reason.
He was running guns for the Colombians at the time.
Similar, chasing us. And they wanted to work with a reseller to take on both the sales and support. So we did that for a number of years. I started out in the support role, and then about 4 years ago, moved into the business development role, and have been doing so ever since. And so we've had products that move media and metadata around different environments for about 12 years, very unique products that we'll jump into. So yeah, I've been in the industry for about 9 years, and you know, I didn't graduate, you know, grade school with the plan of working for Marquis Broadcast, but here we are, and I'm happy to be here, and providing solutions for these challenging workflows is pretty exciting in a geeky, nerdy way, as we like to say.
I think we all kind of feel that way here as well.
And so Marquis is a British firm founded in the UK. Tell us a little bit about the company, its background, their CEO, and his background, because obviously it ties into your guys' expertise quite a bit.
Yeah. Our founder was ex-Avid, and our CEO or chairman, Peter Davis, he used to run Avid Europe, I might say, in the glory days, in the 90s, So he was a big wig there. And so the company's been around for about 15 years. And I think their first project was to move files in and out of Avid environment to a Grass Valley environment. And there was just, Avid came to the CEO at the time, Granby Patrick, and said, hey, you know, you're a pretty smart guy. Can you create some software to do this? And it was really a piggyback off of Transfer Manager, because Transfer Manager couldn't do that.
Sounds like that was a broadcast environment, most likely. They had Grass Valley, you know, video IT infrastructure, and they needed to be able to, what, send files from Media Composer to, like, playout servers or newsroom management system or something like that?
Yeah, for ingest on the Grass Valley system and, you know, edit and finishing on the Avid system and then playback or playout back on the Grass Valley system. So really the round trip of the media files. And as you guys rightfully know, you know, a lot of our customers today have and want to have best of breed products. So they want the best ingest. They want the best playout MAM editing system. And most of the time, those are all from different vendors. And so who have different wrappers, formats, what have you. And so the software that initially was created for that one project has evolved into a larger software toolkit to be able to move those media files back and forth seamlessly and efficiently so that they can all play nice together. And, you know, you can use those best of breed products that have the super nice UIs and easy to work with, and you don't have to worry about the background processes of how these files get to from location X to location Y.
And you mentioned Transfer Manager. That's the Avid tool that lets you basically send files out of Media Composer. It's a separate app from Media Composer itself, correct?
It's an Avid product that it enables them to get files at a limited fashion, I might add, in and out of the Avid world. And so, you know, would they put a lot of emphasis on that product to get files out of their system? I can't speak to that. I can only hint to that.
Well, okay, and this brings up an interesting point that some people may be confused with. Like, you know, for folks who are used to Final Cut 7 and its lineage, or the Adobe Premiere editing product and kind of its whole philosophy, we're making it sound like with Avid, there's these sort of maybe somewhat self-imposed roadblocks to easily getting files in and out.
Yeah, and I mean, if I'm working in Final Cut 7 or Premiere or even Final Cut 10, I just do an import and it's there, right?
Right. It's
or
wide open.
Export, and we're using very standard formats, and those software developers who make those nonlinear editors kind of go out of their way to expose the guts of, for instance, their project file formats, so it's easy to integrate with it and have plugins or so Daniel, you tell us, what's the reality in the Avid worldview? Feel free to be politically correct, but you know, it generally is a little different on the Avid side, would you say?
Yeah, historically Avid's been, you know, closed off, kind of their own little silo, their own little ecosystem. And so it's, in the last few years, they have made claims and are most likely pushing towards to being more open. However, that hasn't truthfully happened yet, because, you know, it's still difficult to, even with their toolkits, to get files in and out of their environments in a very efficient manner. A lot of people still, and we used to actually in the early days, we relied on Transfer Manager to get media and metadata in and out of the Avid environment. And we saw straight away that was not a great way to go forward, because there was limitations with codec support, reliability of the Transfer Manager, and as far as speed is concerned. And so we create our own engine to do effectively what Transfer Manager is trying to do. And we have a, you know, very wide range of codec support. We're very fast and very efficient.
And I think, I was just going to say, I mean, to be fair, right? You look at, like, you know, Avid's been around, I think, really even since the 80s, they had NLE technology and then really came into their own in the 90s. And given that, first of all, just computer-based desktop nonlinear editing was much newer then, lots of people were still doing a lot of tape-to-tape editing workflows at that point. I know when I was in college in the mid-90s, I started college off with, you know, tape-to-tape U-matic linear editing, and by the time I was out, we were playing around with Avid stuff, and so mm-hmm. it was a newer set of technologies then, and I think at that point in time, if you were the type of customer with the budget to buy this type of digital editing technology and the rest of the ecosystem that Avid had, getting everything from a single vendor, you know, from a supportability standpoint, made a lot of sense.
That's huge.
Very fair. I mean, very fair to think that you don't want to stitch together your solution. Frankly, there just weren't as many players in the space at that point. Yep. It was a more nascent set of technologies. And what's obviously happened in the last 25 plus years is that this space has exploded. IT has exploded. The utilization of IT technologies through video workflows throughout all points, storage, workflow management, you name it, has exploded.
Yep.
You have 50 times as many providers in the space. And people kind of take for granted that you can stitch things from one vendor together with things from another vendor and just make it work. But the reality is Avid still maintains a somewhat vertical arrangement. And it's certainly always been a little easier to, if you're using Avid Media Composer as your editing software, to use Avid's storage, what used to be just the Unity system and now is called Unity Isis, and then Avid's production asset management and media asset management platforms that are interchangeably called Interplay PAM and Interplay MAM, and Avid's broadcast servers, and you know, you go on and on and on. And so that's why, to me, you know, because we've always had at Chesapeake this idea that we want to be able to pick and choose the vendors that we want to work with. We want to be able to say, oh, you like that NLE, but this is the storage that we think you should have. But, oh, look, this is the MAM you're using. We've always prided ourselves on kind of building the solutions ourselves and picking from the best of class categories.
And what best fits the customer's, you know, needs and budget. And
absolutely. Yeah. And the reality is people like editing in Avid. It's the main draw to Avid's platform that they like the editor. And that is perfectly fair and perfectly reasonable. But the fact that the decision an editor makes could then have such impact over like $100,000, $300,000, $1 million worth of the rest of your infrastructure, that's kind of not how we like to operate. And so that's why, to me, you guys were a very interesting find, you know, in the sea of vendors. And, you know, anyone can see when they go to NAB and just count how many thousands of booths there are or whatever. You were a really interesting find because with Avid, having you as a partner gave us the flexibility to give people the editor that they wanted, but maybe have more flexibility over some of the other aspects of their infrastructure. Now, just get this out of the way, Daniel. What does Marquis mean, and why is it not pronounced Marquis?
It's not Marquis. The company's British, and just where we got our namesake from, the founder of Marquis, his father, when he found out that him and his mother were going to have a baby boy, he went out to the local pub, and he got really, really drunk and actually got kicked out.
This is actually a more extensive version of this story than I've heard before.
Wow. Yeah. So you can edit what you want. But when he was looking up from the concrete after being thrown out, he just looked up and saw that the pub he was in was called the Granby of Marquis. And so he thought, well, I'll name my firstborn Granby. And so Granby, who is the founder of Marquis, you know, he obviously knows that story from probably before he could, you know, before he
wow,
could talk.
Wow, that is a pretty awesome story.
And so as you can, you know, see what's coming, he, you know, when he started the company, he thought, well, I'll finish that little cycle off and name the company Marquis after that same pub. So as, you know, as luck would have it, a British company named after a pub for really no apparent reason other than a father getting kicked out for being too drunk one night. So
that's so
here
much,
we are.
That's so much cooler than Chesapeake Systems. I just have to say, people are like, Chesapeake Systems, does that have something to do with that bay? Are you located in Virginia? And I'm like,
Are you
well,
in the
yes
water?
And no, and we don't sell crabs or other seafood products. Don't come to us for your Maryland rockfish needs.
We're not going to work on your boat.
So well, you guys have a very interesting story, and it is a very unique niche. Let's get into talking about some of the products that you guys have, because there's kind of a handful of them.
Let's
start, kind of a little more basic, and we'll work our way to more complex. Let's start with project parking and sequence parking, because these, to me, if you are in an Avid environment on Avid storage, if you've got an Isis, and you know, first of all, that Isis is not necessarily the cheapest storage system, dollar per terabyte-wise, that you can buy, and you're looking to either bounce stuff off to a tape archive, you want to have
it's
going to
fill up eventually, right?
It's going to fill up. People fill their Isis all the time. And if you want to have like a tier two, that's like a file server that's less expensive, dollar per terabyte wise, that you're not really using for production purposes, but it's just kind of a storage bin, or you have a tape library and you kind of need a cache location to shift stuff to, project parking, in my mind, becomes like a no-brainer. So Daniel, explain it to our listeners, please.
I would be excited to. So project parking, as you said, is a product that really, you know, lets you take advantage and really manage your valuable edit shared storage, because, you know, you've got, depending on what size of storage you have, whether it's 32 terabytes or, you know, 200 terabytes, you're going to fill it up. It's the nature of the beast. File sizes are getting bigger. People want to keep their storage online and accessible for longer, and so that space gets filled up quickly. And most of our clients work at a project per project basis. You know, they're working, you know, today's project, tomorrow's project. And so there was really no easy way to archive at that same level. So project parking actually branched out of sequence parking, and I'll get to that in a minute. But project parking can essentially take all the media and metadata associated with your current project, bundle it all together, because the files are most likely scattered amongst the ISIS and the metadata is in different places. So it's a great way to bundle that all together and make a snapshot or a backup of that project in a nice organized folder structure, and provide you with a safe, reliable backup.
It might behoove us to kind of talk a little bit about ISIS, Avid Storage System, specifically, because you said you might have stuff all over your ISIS.
Yeah, what does that mean exactly?
I mean, because let me, you know, just say, for folks that use a file server, a NAS for their production storage, folks that use a SAN for their production storage, like StoreNext or XSAN, a lot of the time, it's a single share or a single volume or drive that everyone is mounting, and it's all kind of organized as a single thing. Granted, you have subdirectories and you have an organizational structure there, but, you know, it's one volume. You're implying that ISIS is a little different. Yes, this is like the most leading question in the entire world.
Yes.
But maybe you can talk a little bit about how ISIS is different in terms of its organization, how you admin it, and how you as a user are interacting with subsets of its storage space.
Okay. Well, yeah, ISIS is normally broken down into multiple volumes or workspaces for different departments. I believe it's recommended to have 8 to 10 workspaces. And a lot of times those are for, in the broadcast realm, there'll be workspaces with names such as feeds or news or sports or, you know, what have you, whatever department you want to create.
They could be for different episodes of a show, different programs, different series that you work on, different users could have their own workspaces.
Yeah, maybe like audio, video, graphics kind of thing.
Yes, absolutely. And so the idea is your media goes into your workspace. However, the greater idea is it's shared storage. And so some of the secret sauce that Avid has with their storage, and I think one of the main reasons it's so valuable, is the ability to share that media, so you know you don't have to duplicate it or what have you.
Because multiple people can hit each workspace, so it's not like a workspace is locked to an individual user. And one of the neat functions of a workspace is that if you have projects that are located on these workspaces on the shared storage ISIS system, and you open up a bin, Media Composer and ISIS work together to do a system called bin locking, so different people mm-hmm. can't corrupt the bins within their Avid projects. And it bears stating that a bin in an Avid project tends to be a more robust entity than what you might think of as a bin in a Premiere Pro or a Final Cut project. Yeah. A bin in an Avid project, because it contains both sequences and clips, is almost more like a Final Cut 7 or a Premiere Pro
right.
project file
like
in and of itself.
Yeah.
And then an Avid project file is almost more like a higher level of organization or structure than you even really have in Final Cut or
it's
even
like a campaign or something a larger container than project.
You could have an Avid project file that's really for an entire series, and different episodes of the series are divided into individual bins, each with their own sequences and clips, as well as generic bins for like B-roll for the whole series or your opening credits mm-hmm. sequence stuff or closing whatever, blah, blah, blah. So it's inherently a bit more, I wouldn't say bifurcated because it's more than two, but more dispersed of a way of storing stuff than you tend to have in a file locking SAN like StoreNext, or if you have a NAS that's a single share that everybody's hitting. And it's cool because you can on the fly as an admin of your ISIS add more space to an individual workspace or subtract space from a workspace.
Yeah, so
you have a little slider
dynamically changing.
And that's very different than a lot of other systems. It makes ISIS
very
slick. It's a very slick admin environment. The software for the admin side is very nice. It's really the guts of the system in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
But everything's locked in there. You tend to fill these workspaces up, or you fill the whole system up so you can't carve out any more workspaces and all of your existing workspaces are full. And
right.
So how does project parking come into play? What does it look like from an infrastructure standpoint? And then what's kind of the usage of it look like on a day-to-day basis?
Well, from the infrastructure point of view, is there's not a really easy way. Like I said earlier, these editors are working in a project per project basis. There's not a real easy way to see, because it's a lot of metadata, a lot of references to this media, and being able to see really how big your projects are or where the media lives, because it can live just about any workspace because it's essentially references. There's not a great way within Avid to understand these projects and how who's taking up more space, because it's very valuable space. And so
are you saying that Avid editors are sometimes less than totally organized?
I just think us as a human race is less than totally organized, but yes, I would
very
say
much
so.
Focused on getting the project done, and
they don't need to worry about organizing,
right.
Their media and worrying about if there's enough space. There's typically, not always, but somebody there called a media manager that has that major concern.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it. Most of the time, your editors don't want to be managing space; they just want to be editing.
Yeah, and the editors' bosses don't want their editors to do that either.
Exactly.
Yeah. So talk about some of the analytical functions that the project parking software has, because I know that's kind of usually the first thing someone does. Oh, and say, like, how is project parking even installed? Where does it live? Does it live on an
right.
editing system? Does it live on a server?
Right. So project parking really can be installed on a PC that has storage connectivity. So as long as there's because with ISIS, you have to have an ISIS client that gives you the ability to mount these volumes or workspaces. And so project parking would be installed on a PC. It could be an editor, or it could be just a light basic PC that has the connectivity to the ISIS storage.
And when you say PC, you mean a Windows PC, because it is Windows
PC.
Software, right? Got it.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That's correct. And so with that, we would have access to all the project files all the different files that the editors work on, which contain all the references and information about that project and the media that it references. And so Project Parking would look at those files and keep track of all those references.
So it actually scans the project files first.
To see what media is being used where.
Yes, to see what those references to the media to take reference of all of that.
And then it can actually show you how much space a particular project is using.
Right. Because one of my customers came to me at NAB several years ago saying, we were talking about this, and he said, well, I do that too. I can tell how big my projects are, but it's me going into Avid, selecting the project, selecting delete, and Avid would come up with an interface saying, are you sure you're getting ready to delete 500 gigabytes? And they would hit cancel and jot that down.
Sounds so less than intuitive.
You hit the wrong button, and like suddenly you're kind of in deep doo-doo.
If you have a Tourette's moment and you hit no or yes, and you lost all of your media,
right,
just trying to take notes of how big your project are.
Sounds like it's also very time-consuming in a shop that has lots of projects.
Exactly. And so I think on that feature, being able to tell how big projects are.
And it does this as like a big scan you typically do when you first install the software, right? You go, analyze my entire ISIS and every project and give me, because you guys have like cool little graphs. You guys tell people about what duplicate files you have that might be the same exact file. You have orphaned files. Tell us about those kind of things and the value that that provides.
Right. So with understanding those references, we know which project is using which media. Okay. And then we go and look at the actual storage, what I would call a raw level, because Avid does look at the storage. And so we don't utilize Avid's tools like Media Tool, or if Interplay is involved, their indexer. We don't use their database to actually see what media files are there, because as we know, databases and index files can be incorrect or corrupted. So we rely on just, hey, what files are actually there? And so we go and look at each workspace and see which media files are there to compare it to the actual reference files from the project. So we know if, you know, which project has, you know, how many references there are, if there's media missing, like you mentioned, duplicate files. We can tell if these files are duplicated and or orphan files. And by that, I mean media files that are on this storage, but there's no project reference to these files.
Gotcha.
So they're just sitting out there, silting up that space. And
so it could be that could be throwaway takes, or, you know.
It could be, it's a lot of times it's renders that weren't cleaned up properly.
Okay.
Or, you know, somebody goes to delete and there's an option within Avid to delete just the metadata and not actually the media files. And so if you delete the metadata, it's not going to know any more about that file.
But it's still
there.
The
media file's there.
Yep.
And those might take up a lot of space, right? Haven't you gone into certain environments and there's tons of orphans?
There was a news channel in Atlanta that we ran this index against or analysis against. And in their ingest workspace, we found over 8 terabytes of orphaned files. And 90% of them were over a year old, so they haven't been referenced in over a year.
Did they trash them just to free up
that
space?
What we did, you know, because that's a large number, and so it kind of spooks me when you're thinking, you know, is there something wrong with our configuration? But we actually, because they have Interplay as well, and we can go in through web services, Interplay's, you know, third-party tool, to check Interplay's index to see if they know about these files. And Interplay didn't know about 90% of them, so we have this long list of orphan files. And so I told them, I said, hey, pick your biggest, largest 20 files from this list. See if you can find them yourself with all of your tools that you have within Avid. And, you know, if you find one that we are claiming as an orphan file, then I would say this is not a good reference of an indication of what's an orphan. And they
You might want to save it and back all these up somewhere.
Yeah. So they go and they couldn't find any of them because we went and checked all of Avid's tools and against the list that we found, and there's no way to find those files unless you go to the actual file system and look. And
which
somehow
is not what you would normally do in an Avid workflow.
It would take years to do that. And so we started day two of, you know, them having the software of moving these files off. So it's essentially, we call it a sweep. It's a clever marketing term. But essentially, it's a Windows move. And so we moved them off, and what they were going to do is put it off to second-tier storage or even a tape and basically label that tape, you know, November 2014 orphan files. And so they actually have them on lower-cost storage if somebody, you know, squawks that they're missing media, which no one has. And so within a week of them having the software with our analysis tool, we were able to give them back 8 terabytes of ISIS storage.
And I mean, that's many, many thousands of dollars worth of storage.
Sure.
When you look at the price per terabyte. But the question I have, Daniel, is are you ever worried that when you talk about sweeping away or trashing orphans, you're going to like trigger something in a potential customer who's actually an orphan?
Well, I've actually, that's part of my little sales speech when I go talk about orphans, and I always say, I apologize.
You start off, you go, excuse me, sir.
Yeah,
excuse me, ma'am.
This,
do you happen to be an orphan?
Is your name Annie by chance? Because I'm going to change my whole presentation if it's this. And so I don't.
I'm just seeing how it could get you in trouble if you weren't.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, because you picture a big broom chasing these little kids. It's not ideal. And if you know you run across, like you said, someone that was orphaned at an early age, you know, it might not be the best thing.
So okay,
well, I haven't run across that yet.
Or at least that they've told you. It's like those 50 sales you didn't get.
There's 20 opportunities that they never purchased simply because of the orphan situation.
Anyway, so sequence parking. Do we want to talk about that a little
bit, or
the data moving part
so
of project parking?
Sequence parking is different because project parking is really allowing you to look at what, Daniel? Both projects, which are the meta container, well, workspaces kind of, but the projects on workspaces, and then individual bins that are part of a project. Mm-hmm. And take, if I understand it correctly, both an entire project's worth of the media files across all of the bins in that project, or even on a bin-by-bin basis within a project, to basically move that stuff from the ISIS to another tier of disk storage, any other volume that the machine that's running project parking has mounted, whether it's a file share, a SAN volume,
maybe a
local
tape library cache
local
or something
storage.
Like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. A cache that's acting then as kind of the pathway to a tape
archive. Tape archive.
So you've got that level of granularity, projects worth of files or bin level of files, and you just can bounce to and from and back and forth and boom, 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 boom. And it's just a really slick, easy way that's frankly much easier than moving these files around en masse than within Media Composer itself using its own tools or doing it by digging through the file system specifically because there's really no database you're creating to keep track of this stuff. You're having to keep track of it all manually by keeping notes, and we know how well that works or doesn't for people. So that's how project parking works. How is that different than sequence parking?
So sequence parking, and one thing to touch on to add to your very nice description of project parking. I'm
gunning
impressed.
For your job, actually.
Obviously, making me nervous. I'm not going to play this to my UK friends, but so you can run project parking on a machine that's not an actual editor, and so the process of archiving and managing this space does not tie up the editor's resources, so they can just worry about using Media Composer doing their creative thing.
So it could be another Windows desktop. It could be a Windows server that you had remote access
over. And it could be a desktop that does a lot of other things. It's not CPU intensive. It's not going to, you know,
Maybe it's a person who is the media manager's workstation.
Sure.
Yes. Yeah. So they're on Facebook or, you know, Snapchat, and then they got Project Parking running.
Wow. You've got a high regard for media managers, I say.
No, I'm just teasing. Hopefully nobody takes offense to that.
Oh, certainly none of our listeners are media managers,
no,
Daniel.
I'm sure,
you know, no one who deals with managing media listens to the Workflow Show.
So sequence parking is, like you said, project parking is at the project and bin level of management. Sequence parking, where we actually have a tool that ties directly into the Media Composer. And so we had a lot of our customers that, you know, we can – and we'll touch on Medway, I'm assuming, shortly. But with Medway, we can take sequences and consolidate them out as a single file. And
you mean actually do the render and spit it out as a media file?
Avid would do the render because they have their own effects and we're not a render farm. But when it comes to taking all those clips and, you know, when you go to export a file, maybe it's as a QuickTime or whatever via Avid does that he does its renders of its effects, but it also has to do a consolidation because there's multiple clips. It has to stitch them together and create a single file. So Medway can do that in the background and saving loads of time with that process. But sequence parking, what that does is it takes the sequence and basically it creates a snapshot of the sequence. So it takes the effects, the media files, the metadata about all the media files and where they go. It exports the sequence, everything together, unrendered, not consolidated. So the sequence as it is.
The componentry, right? All of the stuff you need to derive it, but still in a highly manipulatable format.
Right.
You still have handles on all the media files. Mm-hmm. You can still manipulate parameters of effects. Because really, you'd be opening this up as a sequence in a bin with all of those settings associated with it in a non-rendered form.
So this me with my audio background, this sounds kind of like a very similar thing to like making an OMF or an AAF file to give to a... You're basically consolidating everything into one file, but it's still got your sequence information, your handles, all that stuff.
Right, so... So yes, it grabs all the media files, all those OP atoms, puts it together into a bundled file, and puts it off to second tier storage. So you can say, okay, I'm done with this sequence today, but I may need to be able to lift an effect or change some things.
Change a graphic, change a title.
Yeah. And so when you go to restore these sequences, it doesn't have to come back to the same editor. You can ship it off. You restore it.
Sure.
And you have all of your media plus handles. You have all of your effects that are not rendered, so you can change some things. And so we really sequence parking when working with third-party media asset management companies. They really jumped on the idea, send the media asset management a flattened file with metadata, but also that same sequence parked. And so you have the sequence as a flattened file, and then you have the sequence in a condition or format that, like I said, is able to be restored and manipulated.
Now, you kind of implied, is that actually triggered from within Media Composer, the editing software itself?
It is.
So that's very different than Project Parking, which is a separate application on a separate machine.
Right, and totally in the background. Sequence parking will actually, there's two ways to trigger a sequence park or sequence export. We actually have a drain icon that can be configured to do this. And so there will be a client that runs on the actual editor. There will be a drain icon that's always on top because Avid paints the screen, but we have this little drain that you can drag your sequence.
I mean, it you're talking like a literal drain.
Like, yeah. That
like,
you
we're going to be sweeping these orphans down the drain.
No, not orphans don't go down the drain.
Okay.
These are, yeah.
But you really have all of these
sequence. Yeah.
Very sad imagery that's associated with their
very
product.
Dark and depressing.
I mean, the company's named after, like, getting kicked out of a bar after, like, probably starting a brawl. Someone died. Like someone died in that fight.
Hey, no lives were lost.
No lives were lost in the creation of this company.
The official story, anyway.
So if you don't like the drain icon, which everyone does, but if you don't, if you're offended by it, we actually can do so within the Avid Sentoo menu. So
and that's only available on Windows, the drain, right? Because Mac doesn't let you have
and
a
Mac,
little floating icon over everything.
Right.
Mac doesn't allow that. And so we have a Sentoo menu option to
so
add.
Is so. There a server component that this client-side application on the Media Composer workstations is talking to and that server itself actually does this stuff? Or is it all happening on the desktop level?
Recommended would be a server to take that load off the editor, but it can work.
So it's passing some sort of a command off to that server.
Yeah, it's basically what happens is it's an AAF reference file that gets exported and that describes all the media. And our guys have figured out that AAF reference, and so they can go and grab the media in the background. So the server would have an Avid storage client connection software to be able to access the storage again. We go and grab the media And, you know, however it's been configured, we provide the output.
Now, in the case of sequence parking, obviously project parking is very oriented around Avid's own storage platforms, but is sequence parking a little more agnostic, or is it also really for use in an ISIS environment?
I would say it's agnostic. We actually have it for Final Cut Pro as well.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. The goal was/is, it hasn't been finished, but to archive a sequence maybe in Avid and then restore that same sequence into Final Cut.
Ooh, interesting.
But we looked at that, and the reason why it wasn't finished because we have a product that's called Bridging. And so instead of archiving and restoring with sequence bridging, you can go straight from Avid, Final Cut Pro 7, Adobe Premiere 7, and basically start, maybe you start in Final Cut Pro and you want to finish in Avid, you start a sequence.
Is that multi-directional? Can you really bounce between any of those in any direction?
You can.
So it's kind of like there used to be a thing called Automatic Duck. And it was kind of discontinued because, at least at the time, the guy who wrote Automatic Duck got hired by Adobe. That product line kind of went away, but you had to buy the individual components. I want to go from Avid Media Composer to Premiere, or from Media Composer to Final Cut 7. But bridging kind of sounds like a much more advanced version of that.
It is.
It's kind of just to go any direction between any of the supported products. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's a client-server way of doing so. So it's background process. And nice. So, you know, it works. It's basically both of sequence bridging and parking are subsets of Medway. And so a lot of our Medway customers are using these products within the Medway software to do these tasks. And so it's a
Medway.
Nice little app.
Medway.
I was about
What does Medway mean, Dan?
I have a guess. Media,
you should know by now.
Media Highway.
Yeah, look at you.
Very nice.
Yes.
I didn't know what CatDV meant at one point. I guessed that the DV meant digital video, but I was like, what does this have to do with felines?
With kitty cat.
And someone was like, catalog, you numbskull. And I was like, what does this have to do with the JCPenney catalog? And they were like, no, catalog as in database, which is what British people call databases.
Right.
And I was like, oh, and it was written by a British person.
Uh-huh.
My God. Okay, so Media Highway. We've gotten to the pinnacle of your life.
Flagship product.
It is.
You live for it.
I do. It's very intense. It's very workflow centric product.
So let me ask you this: if you have project parking and sequence parking and bridging, do you have Medway, or does Medway give you more than that?
Sequence bridging and sequence parking can be subsets of Medway. They can be their standalone products, or they can be all tied in with Medway.
Project parking is a different fork of development.
Different beast.
Got it.
Which, as I've told Daniel, I think, you know, it would be cool if they could.
Yes, it'd be cool. I know.
Bridge these lines of code development.
Yeah, I know. Well, those two developers don't get along, so it's not...
They get in fights at bars.
Yeah, lots of fights in bars and ejections and stuff like that.
But they're pubs,
Medway,
actually.
You got it right. You win the prize. It's short for Media Highway. And so basically...
Is that like what Al Gore invented?
Yes. It was just behind the internet. And so what Medway does is with customers buying different products, maybe it's editing, maybe it's playout, maybe it's archiving from different companies.
Or a media asset management system.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We like those.
Yeah, we do.
They're very nice. And so most of the time...
They're very nice.
It's very nice.
I should have my picture as I dressed up as him for Halloween a couple years ago. And
I could see that.
It's actually scary how...
I caught a few minutes of that on TV the other day. I forgot just how...
Creepy.
Intense and experienced Borat is.
Yes, it is.
I mean, like...
One of my finer moments. Oh, it's good stuff. Very nice.
So, very nice.
Where were we? Midway. How that segued into Borat, I'll never know. But
that's just kind of how this audio podcast goes, Daniel.
Yeah, yeah. I figured it would. So with these best of breed products, different products from different companies, there's struggles with file and compatibilities, repetitive, highly user interactive processes, and these processes need to be sped up and automated. And so what Medway can do is a lot of these different systems have different file formats and wrappers, and Medway can basically rewrap, transcode, and the media files back and forth again in the background. So the actual demo of the software is painfully boring because it's a progress bar, but
it's just a progress bar.
But when you look under the hood, you know, some of the difficulties of rewrapping and transcoding.
What's platform. Behind the progress bar?
It's a platform, right? That's the thing. There's little bits of a GUI, because as you and I have talked about, to send things from Media Composer into Medway, thus to get it into some other system, like a third-party MAM, a third-party archive platform, a third-party playout server. You might use the drain paradigm if you're on Windows, or the menu option on Windows, or, again, as a Mac client, you're running that Medway client software that runs on your individual workstation but gives you the menu option to kind of publish back into Medway, let Medway do the actual rendering of the sequence on its own engine, and maybe give a copy of that unrendered version of the assets or whatever, and then pass that to the other system for whatever reason, including moving of the files, transcoding of the files, interpreting between the Avid quote-unquote metadata or project formats and the third-party metadata formats that you need to register something in. You guys might come up with something to talk to their APIs, their application programming interfaces, through the Medway servers. Is this all remotely, you know, like reality?
Yep. All while showing you a nice little progress bar, which is it's actually huge. Like it seems, you say it's boring, but like everybody wants that progress bar. It's huge.
It is. And with, you know, it's been around for several years, us being able to export down the drain. What editors like about it is it's almost like that shop on TV or whatever it was, set it and forget it. You drop it down the drain, and the idea was, the dark and dreary idea was, is you don't have to worry about the plumbing. We have workflows tied behind these drains where, let's say, this drain goes to playout, and they're done with, they know they send a playout, and they just drag their sequence onto the drain. It's an instantaneous process. They can actually shut down their system because they don't have to wait for Avid to do its consolidation and export. We can have a dialogue pop up if you want to add with your favorite media asset management company. If you're sending files to that system and you want to add some metadata, because metadata is pretty important these days. I don't know if you're playing along there, but
do you want to be able to find anything after you put it in there?
Do you know anything about its history?
We're
and where
big
it came from?
Believers in metadata, yes. Daniel. Let me tell you, we are so meta.
Yeah,
that we're hovering above the entire world.
One of the things that we find is that a lot of our clients like to rely on the sort of file system hierarchy of folders and files and how they organize their folder structure for their projects.
It's kind of one type of metadata.
It is one type of metadata. So when you ingest that into a MAM like Reach Engine or CatDV, you know that file system metadata becomes searchable metadata. So I would think in an Avid environment, it would be even kind of, you know, more important, because you don't have control over the file system like you would with a Premiere workflow.
When you're exporting from an Avid environment, you're creating a new asset, and when you send it to a media asset management system, you need to have metadata that comes along with it. It just needs to happen, and you know, who knows more about that asset than the editor when they've finished it? And so when you drag it on the drain, we can have a pop-up dialogue that's completely customizable. So we can pull any of the Avid fields that describe that those media files, and then we can have any fields that you want. I mean, if you want to put your dog's name or the editor's name or whatever added to this metadata about this new asset.
Name of the pub your father got thrown out of 25 years ago. Sorry.
We can make these fields required so that they can't export it without populating at least, you know, a few things about the file.
Right.
And so that goes automatically into the MAM systems. They're looking for these metadata files, and they can say, oh, this file, this XML file that's very open and generic, well, here's the metadata. That means that there's a file going to be in location X, and they create a proxy, and you have all your information, and you have your files.
Now, it goes the other way, too, right?
Right.
Like, let's say you have a third-party MAM, and that's where your assets first get ingested into, and it has its own proxies, and people are tagging things with metadata in the MAM. Describe mm-hmm. a workflow where maybe you would send from that platform to Media Composer for editing purposes.
Absolutely. So you have all of these files, and you have a lot of our MAM vendors we work with have a proxy editing feature within it, and you can actually create a shot list or an edit decision list, as we like to call it, to where you've grabbed, you know, portions of these files and you want to send that to an Avid system or Final Cut Pro or Adobe for, you know, mastering. And what Medway will do is when you create that shot list and you hit a button within the media asset management world that says send to Avid, they'll actually generate metadata to describe, you know, the ins and outs of the clips that are referenced. Mm-hmm. Medway goes and grabs the high res of each clip referenced, stitches it together, creates a sequence file for Avid, and sends it over to the Avid storage. And if Interplay, which is Interplay PAM, is involved, we can actually check those new assets into Interplay automatically.
Could it just be full clips as well, and it was just a collection of clips, not so much a sequence per se, but just references to clips?
Yeah, and what will happen is if it's just full clips like that, we'll actually still create a sequence because we're stubborn that way. But the sequence will come in describing the clips, and each individual clips will be brought into the bin.
Now, if your clips were in a format that was like a camera native format, but mm-hmm. you wanted to turn them into the Avid Media Composer preferred format, which is, again, one of these MXFs of a certain type called an OP-ATOM, using their DNxHD codec, either at 145 or 220 or whatever the options are, it can also, as part of that process, generate those Avid native versions of the media files and have those be what get plopped onto the storage that the Avid editors have access to, correct?
Right, right. And you hit a large pain point that we're seeing in the industry is so many different camera ingest formats. I mean, they're continuously growing, and being able to take those files and transcode them into a Avid friendly or Final Cut or Adobe friendly format all in one fell swoop is very very efficient.
Well, there's like 15 that are alone that are camera formats that are based on MPEG-2, and another like 37 now that are based on H.264, and it's like there's a new one every other week, and it's like
And even the ones that are the same are like still slightly different depending on the camera.
Exactly. It's a pain in the ass, but you know, it's also why we're around, because with so many different camera formats, there's also so many different platforms that content's being delivered to.
Well, and again, unlike some of the other editing platforms, Avid either doesn't allow you to use these native formats. They do have some plugins and a software system that's part of Media Composer called AMA or Avid Media Access that allows you to do editing of some camera native formats in their original form without turning them into DNxHD. But in general, it's not as preferred and as efficient in Media Composer. Mm-hmm. And so you don't get the same level of real-time previewing of effects, the same speed when rendering things. Avid's whole engine is still highly optimized around that DNxHD format wrapped as an OP-ATOM MXF file. And you guys are one of the few people on the market who speak that codec and wrapper format fluently, both to and from, which is a hugely valuable asset for these environments where this is the story of the day. Now, let me ask you this, and if you don't have the answer immediately available, but we talked earlier about how, like, ISIS storage is implicitly kind of split into many workspaces. How would you choose which workspace to spit either the original media files into or the newly generated DNxHD MXF OP Atom files that was part of this, like, send from MAM into Avid storage workflow? Like, where is Medway talking? How is it getting that list of workspaces?
That's a great question, Nick. I'm glad that you asked it. I very appreciate this. But there's a few ways that we could handle this. One is a manual way, which, you know, saying that word manual is never super positive. But if you created a shot list that you wanted to send to a workspace, we can actually provide a list of workspaces that you could then take within our interface, our progress bar interface. It has a source and a destination side on it. So on the left is your source. So we would see a list of your EDLs or edit decision lists from the MAM, and you could simply drag and drop to your desired workspace. Another way of doing it is putting some automation behind that, and we could have essentially watch folders for each workspace. And within the MAM, you would have a button that would say, you know, send to Avid, and then you could have a kind of a drop down workspace, you know, X, Y, or Z.
Just a sort of a watch folder based system where the files would be moved into it. Okay.
Starting out with most of our MAMs, that's what we do because it's just easier.
It's easier to configure.
It's very, very efficient. But
do you have to manually like tweak those config files if you create a new workspace, or can it kind of pull the full set of existing workspaces on the fly and keep that list updated?
It would be a manual process.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, it seems like, you know, with all that stuff and, you know, how this ties into conversations that you and I have been having, Daniel, that Chesapeake and you guys and maybe some third-party solutions, we might have some interesting stuff to show off, perhaps in the maybe NAB timeframe if we can get our stuff together. I think that's what we're talking about. Can't tilt our hands now too much, but I know that, you know, us and you guys are very anxious to kind of give some real-world examples of this.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
Again, we're a very multi-platform organization, and this just feeds right into, you know, giving users the choice to have Avid, which is still very much kind of heavily involved in even some of the highest ends of editorial work that's being done. I mean, it still is the editing software most major theatrical productions are done in, much of broadcast television, et cetera, et cetera. But this set of capabilities really offers people who are oriented around that platform just a lot of other options than taking that totally vertical approach with Media Composer.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really cool. And again, we may have some interesting things to start showing off relatively soon, or at least hopefully by NAB. So tell us kind of what's been new, what's kind of taking a lot of the development resources, and, you know, maybe where things are going a little bit before we let you go today.
All right. With Medway, or with that technology, as you know, we can move. We understand the Avid world quite well, as we've discussed for a little bit now. And as a lot of our customers are adopting new workflows, potentially with Premiere, we've developed a Premiere panel that enables you to utilize Avid Interplay and Avid Storage for edit in place. And so with Adobe Premiere, you can actually, and the Marquis panel, which I don't have a proper name for it yet, but you can actually search Interplay, request an AAF within the panel, within Premiere, and so we'll actually be able to edit in place the Avid MXF OP Atom files on the Premiere. And so those customers with Avid Interplay, most of them already have Premiere just because they have the Adobe package and Premiere comes with that. And
or so they may have another work group that's like the promo work group or the graphics guys who do a little bit of Premiere work.
Right. And so they can easily, with this panel, look into the Avid world and get what they need, not having to go through, you know, call the Avid guys or the media manager and bug them. They can say, hey, I can just edit in place And then once they're finished editing, maybe it's with the Avid files and some of their own, they can actually, within the same panel, publish back to ISIS if they want and create a new asset and check it back into Interplay. Or they can publish to Playout server or to archive or whatever they want to do and add metadata and tie it in with the MAM system as well.
You know what this all reminds me of?
Is it a song?
Well, it is, actually.
I thought it might be.
Well, I was first thinking of Kumbaya and like how this is really like the workflow version of just everybody, no matter your race or your creed, getting together and holding hands and singing Kumbaya. But then, even more so, what was that like 1980s Coke commercial where
with Willie Nelson?
It was like everyone like on a hilltop holding hands.
We Are the World.
It wasn't We Are the World, but that's kind of like this too.
You Were Always on My Mind.
What was the song in the Coke ad? It was like, if I could teach the world to sing, blah 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 blah.
Makes you
want to
skip and smile.
I mean, you know, you guys are like the workflow version of that just harmonious world.
I'm gonna have to look this up. Yes, that's
you're
good.
Kind of like utopia of workflow. You like that?
I do.
That's what you could call that new product. Utopia.
We were thinking about calling it Nick Gold's panel.
I like that even more. I mean, it's really kind of one and the same.
Yes.
You know, Utopia,
Utopia
and
Isn't
Nick
that
Gold.
Your middle name, Utopia?
Nick Utopia Gold. Yes, it is,
I
Daniel.
Can think of a dozen other nicknames you probably have, too.
Yeah, so...
All right, let's cut so that off right there.
Yeah, that's new in the Midway technology world. And then with Project Parking, we've added an addition or even a second product to really become, and I know there's backup softwares out there, but an ISIS backup tool, right, that it runs on a server, it backs media and metadata up at a workspace level. And the kicker point of this is having the Project Parking intelligent restore. And so you have your backup of your workspaces and your project files, removing any duplication that there might be with other software. And then let's say the worst happens, you lose your ISIS in a storm of some sort or an earthquake. I don't know what it might be, but or just a power failure.
A flood. And,
yes. Yes.
Godzilla.
Yeah. We don't want that. Like back in 92.
Godzilla Kaiju monster
town.
Attack.
Yes. And so.
Nashville wiped off map.
Actually, that happened.
And,
that happened
so
a while ago.
ISIS, but you have, you know, workspaces with workspace parking or whatever the name is. You can actually pull back individual bins and projects to your individual workspace and start working straight
away.
So you
can start working on the stuff you were just working on when the disaster happened.
Yes, right. Because they actually, there was a company that had, you know, an ISIS backup on tape. It was a Danish radio station, actually. And they would, okay, let's do the disaster recovery test. And they said, the good news is the files coming off the tape, or it was a Danish news station. The files coming off tape are good. They're usable. The bad news is it's going to take us 2 weeks to get everything back.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a news station. In 2 weeks, that media is going to be irrelevant. So it's not an ideal. It's a good backup, but
sure.
The restore process is terrible.
Well, and that's, you know, people don't think about that enough when
just
it comes
say,
to backups.
That
like,
is,
it's the business continuity planning that's mm-hmm. just as important as like saying, oh yeah, we've got a system packing things up.
We
because
very frequently have the discussion with clients about like how much money they're willing to invest in a backup system, and they kind of think of it as, oh well, you know, whatever's the cheapest. Not all the time, but you know, that's the, you know, what are our price options? And our response is, well, what's your business continuity look like? I mean, how long could you be down if you lost your primary
Well, because
storage?
It's like we say, for instance, data tape is a really good disaster recovery backup system from the perspective that it's very easily transportable offsite to mm-hmm. a separate geographical location. Because when Godzilla
exactly.
walks through your primary production facility and steps on your SAN, your ISIS, And, you know, it's like, remember Bambi meets Godzilla, where, like, the foot lands on Bambi? Well, absolutely. Imagine that's your lead editor and not Bambi.
Mm.
And
no, like, how about your ISIS?
Or your ISIS. Or probably all of the above. Godzilla has pretty big feet.
That's true.
You know, it's like, well, okay, great. You have a copy in another geographic location, but how long is it going to take to get stuff back from tape and get those tapes in your facility or get them in a new facility? Yep. For people who need business continuity and quickly get back up and running, but short of your facility getting stepped on by Godzilla or a flood or a fire or whatever, you know, you might want just a disk-to-disk replication system.
So it sounds like that's what we're kind of talking about here.
So it would be great if you could use this to prioritize, let's get back those immediate projects that we were just working on.
Yeah.
And then we can kind of be a little more leisurely at bringing everything back online to our production volume once it's fully up and running and everything. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that sounds really useful from a business continuity planning perspective.
Right, and we've had customers and resellers tell us, you know, because ISIS are most of the time mirrored, right? And so if you get this backup and you feel confident in it, as we do, could you restripe your ISIS? I don't know. It's a pretty interesting thought, because then you would gain 30% of your more storage on the ISIS. So
a lot of different stuff you guys are up to.
Yeah.
Avid Workflow Utopiaville.
That's where I live. Mailing address.
And you're like the only one there. It's like you dropped on an island.
It's very lonely.
There's not too many people in Avid Workflow Utopiaville. No. But there would be if they were more engaged with you guys through your wonderful integration reseller partner, Chesapeake Systems, of course.
That's right.
I think this is the breakout year for really
starting with this podcast.
Bringing more people into Utopia.
Yes.
Cool, yes, man. Indeed. Well, listen, thank you kindly for being our guest today.
Yes, thank you.
This has been fantastic. I'm sure a lot of our listeners will be very interested in this, given there's really such a vacuum for information when it comes to melding Avid stuff together with anything else. It seems to be a very big black box. And the thing is, you guys have the boxes to make that work. So thank you, Daniel. If obviously anyone has questions about just taking a look at your stuff, you guys have a lot of really good demo videos up. Where can they go to learn more, obviously, in addition to talking to us here at Chesapeake?
Yeah, talking to you guys first, but our website is marquisbroadcast.com, and there, you like you said, you could see, you know, videos of specific features of products, not the whole product itself, but
it's great. You guys have done some great that's MARQUIS broadcast.com.
Yep.
That's correct.
And listen, well, we will see you soon, I'm sure. We bump into each other regularly enough. Mm-hmm. And if anyone needs like actual in-person demos, you are obviously available to help us out, so they can reach out to us and we can put them in touch with you when it comes to any of this stuff.
Absolutely.
Questions. I've just found that the guys at Marquis frankly know the Avid ecosystem and its ins and outs better than most people at Avid. So they are a tremendous resource if you're having any workflow issues of that nature. Well, thanks again, Daniel. And this has been another episode of The Workflow Show. Thank you, Mr. Whetstone.
Thank you, Mr. Gold.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. Take care.
Thank you.
The Workflow Show is a production of Chesapeake Systems. We welcome your comments and suggestions for upcoming episodes. You can email us at workflowshow@chesa.com. That's workflowshow@chesa.com. And if you'd like to talk with a member of our team of experts about your particular digital media workflow needs, email us at prosales@chesa.com. That's prosales@chesa.com.